clearly this stuff is so important now that it's causing people to scenario plan like this.
There should be sort of a Doctor Strange love doomsday machine.
Advancement of science unmistakably is what humanity needs to solve its human scale problems.
From Orion X in association with Inside HPC, this is the At HPC podcast. Join Shaheen Khan and Doug Black as they discuss supercomputing technologies and the applications, markets, and policies that shape them. Thank you for being with us.
It's Doug Black at Inside HPC, and I'm with Shaheen Khan at OrionX.net. And Happy New Year. I hope you had a great holiday break.
Yes. Happy 2022. You know, some people point out that you can say 2022 like it's 2020 also. And I'm saying we get to have another go at it. So hopefully we'll do a better job this time.
Okay. A do-over. So there was a big story we put out on Inside HPC on Thursday, the 6th. It's by two military scholars who are putting out the suggestion that in the event that China were to invade Taiwan, that there should be sort of a Doctor Strange love doomsday machine kind of mechanism in place in which TSMC, Taiwan Semiconductor Manufacturing Company, would be literally blown up. The notion is that this would be a disincentive for China to invade the island nation because TSMC is so economically valuable and the technology capabilities that it has are so valuable.
Yeah, I saw that. And the amazing part of it to me is that, like, when I saw that on the website, I say, whoa, is that really the kind of topic we're talking about now in high tech? And how did we get here? Clearly, this stuff is like so important now that it's causing people to scenario plan like this.
Yeah, Nixon used the term war game it out. And it's sort of a logical extension of these growing, the emergence and importance of technology as a competitive component on the world stage, geopolitically, economically, militarily. And also the notions of technology sovereignty, where the key regions and nations, be it the EU, China, Japan, and the US, in the race to exascale, also really pursuing their own microprocessor strategies as well.
Right on. And of course, 5G before this was another point of contention. So maybe, Doug, you want to take us through what the article said and what the papers say, and we can have a discussion on it.
Yeah, the article is called Broken Nest, Deterring China from Invading Taiwan. And the notion is to basically make Taiwan unwantable. That was a phrase that turned up in...
Like a poison pill?
It kind of is a poison pill. The article first appeared in a quarterly military journal in mid-November, and it quickly became the most downloaded paper put out by any of the War College scholarly journals of the year. And it only had 6 weeks of 2021 to achieve that kind of status. It since has been picked up by Nikkei Asia, which the news service. I found it in Data Center Times. So it's kind of getting circulated in military and sort of strategy.
It's gone viral for such a thing.
Exactly. Let me just read one of the quotes from the paper. The United States and Taiwan should lay plans for a targeted scorched earth strategy that would render Taiwan not just unattractive if ever seized by force, but positively costly to maintain. This could be done most effectively by threatening to destroy facilities belonging to the Taiwan Semiconductor Manufacturing Company, the most important chip maker in the world and China's most important supplier. So there you go.
Yeah. So some thoughts here. I think that the bigger picture of it for me is just the patently visible growing importance of technology on the world scene. What goes with it is a growing recognition that chips are the engines of the next phase of economic development. And I put it in the context of information revolution, and I'm saying that we went from the plow that enabled agriculture to steam engine that enabled industrialization, and now chips that are enabling information age. So that basically puts it into squarely in the middle of politics. So you cannot separate politics from technology anymore. And technology is now a matter of not just national competitiveness, but national security. And all of this is what has led me to call this technopolitics versus geopolitics.
So the fault lines of technology are also the geopolitical fault lines between superpowers.
Right, because they're all going to essentially partition the internet, partition the world based on their coalition of allies. And that's what we're observing. The impact on supply chain, the impact on science, the impact on HPC, all of that is non-trivial in my view.
Explain to us, there's a company, a Dutch company.
Right.
Yeah. What could be done about this? Other short of blowing up TSMC, there are other possible strategies in play here. And I know you had some thoughts about that.
I think that as much as people can scenario plan and think and dream things, this is still a very much of a dance. And we shall see how that goes. But when you talk about supply chain, the supply chain of the chip industry itself is very important. So when people say TSMC does this and, you know, other people, GlobalFoundries does this, well, there's a supply chain that feeds them. How is it that TSMC can do this? So if you double click on that, it turns out that there's a, you know, fabrication process called extreme ultraviolet lithography that TSMC bet on and other players actually bet against. And that bet paid off. But that bet paid off through a Dutch company called ASML that essentially made it work. And people who bet against it were pretty reasonable. This was not supposed to work, but they managed to make it work. And then ASML itself is dependent on Japanese providers like NCS that provides software for mask. There's a whole taxonomy for it. So this stuff becomes seriously geeky, seriously fast, and hopelessly beyond the capability of most people and probably most politicians. You know, so they really need their staff to go and do the right analysis and do the staff work to allow them to arbitrate properly. But that supply chain is there too. And it isn't just TSMC. It's also ASML. It's also Holland. It's also Japan. And, you know, there's a global nature of this supply chain that is also very important to keep in mind.
Yeah, it's integrators on top of integrators on top of integrators, right?
Right. I mean, a supply chain, right? You hand it over to somebody else who hands it over to somebody else, and eventually you get the product.
Yeah. Now, the other interesting thing, of course, is that TSMC is building not its most advanced, so they say, but a fab in Arizona. And I have felt for quite a while that they can't get that thing up and running fast enough, given the tensions in the Taiwan Straits.
Right on. I mean, when it was announced, my understanding was that that was going to be a so-called N-2 facility. Mm-hmm. That it was going to be two generations behind their leading edge. And at that time, their leading edge was 5 nanometers. By sometime soon, it's going to be to 3 nanometers. And then N-2 of that will be 7. So if you can make that N-1 or indeed N, and I know that's hard to do because you just can't go and build your latest, greatest somewhere else where you have critical mass of expertise and supply chain. So clearly doing that in Taiwan is easier than doing that in Arizona right now. Maybe 5 years from now will be different. So to the extent that they can accelerate that, I think that would be highly welcome by everybody, including themselves, because that's really where all the margin is. That's where all the demand is. And indeed, when you think about HPC, HPC is high end. It means leading edge. It means where all the action is, both in terms of how wonderful it is to get access to that leading edge technology, but also all the issues and the politics that goes with it.
Yeah, it's interesting to look at the paper. Apparently, there are reports that China has a well-developed attack or invasion strategy in place. Literally, it would take 14 hours for China to take Taiwan, to seize it, which over against about a 24-hour response time by the U.S. and Japan. So part of the notion of this strategy is we should probably de-emphasize trying to intimidate China into not invading, because they're growing increasingly militarily capable and confident. To saber rattle could be highly ineffective. It might even be a spur to Japan. But if we look at other disincentives for an invasion, this is certainly would be an aggressive one. But there are others as well, sanctions and so forth. That might be a more effective route.
Right. And of course, I don't think any of these big powers, well, I would like to think, I would like to hope that none of these big powers get into something like this on a whim, that these are pretty, we're talking really big moves here of historical importance. So, you know, I sure hope that this is simply scenario planning and part of the dance that's going on between, well, if you do that, I could do this, or try to send a signal that we are indeed thinking about X, even though we have no intention of doing X. So,
you know, and if nothing else, it gets the other side thinking in a broader level about the possible scenarios that might play out.
Well, I think it makes it public rather than makes them aware, because I have to assume that they already know that the other side should be thinking about X, or it probably is. But when you put a paper out like that, you make it public. You now pull the public into this, which is really why I think it's part of a dance.
Yeah, and you really wonder, I mean, to put out a paper like that with this kind of a suggestion, is it just these two guys just in a room brainstorming, or is there some level of approval through their various organizations that they're associated with to put out something like this?
Well, you know, in the US, the assumption is that people put out what they want to put out. Now, of course, at least one of the universities involved is an Air Force university. So that may indeed require some level of approval process. I really don't know. I'm just speculating. But if this was a different country, I would say that it was all choreographed. But because it is the US, one has to assume that it could just be academic work, and because they're thinking about things, and that's a scenario. And it's as simple as that. Now, this is obviously not official word, but it's also like not nothing.
Right? Yeah, it's, and I guess my final thought, Shane, is, you know, this triumvirate, if you will, of TSMC with AMD and NVIDIA has really become such a juggernaut over the last several years, a competitive threat to Intel. And you put up a thing like this, you wonder what TSMC and NVIDIA are thinking of it.
And Apple and Tesla a bunch of other people. Mm-hmm. There's also Samsung that has capabilities that are a little bit farther away, but they're not as advanced as TSMC is right now. And also we have to remember that AMD and NVIDIA are part of that supply chain, right? So this is really also interesting, because just like TSMC gets credit for having done it and people don't think about ASML and NCS and company and others, NVIDIA and AMD get credit without people thinking about TSMC.
True that.
Because they probably couldn't do it without that sort of a supply chain supporting them. So this whole growing understanding of the importance of supply chain is also very interesting.
Yes. And the potential to raise public awareness of the geopolitics of, what is your term, Shane?
Technopolitics.
Technopolitics, exactly. Okay. Any other thoughts on this?
Another thought is really science traditionally has been a very open environment where people share ideas and bounce ideas, and that's how advances take place, that you read somebody else's paper and it guides what you're going to do. And I'm hoping that all of this political injection into this, it's a factor, is that hopefully it will not impact collaboration in a way that's going to hold us back, because advancement of science unmistakably is what humanity needs to solve its human scale problems. Climate change, COVID was an example. You mentioned in our last episode that HPC is an unsung hero of COVID. That would not have happened without supercomputing, without science, without the collaboration that takes place in science. And we're going to have human scale global problems aplenty. And it would be good, naively speaking, perhaps, but hopefully, at least aspirationally speaking, it would be nice to get to a point where we can collectively work on these human scale problems.
As you expressed that thought, I thought of, for all the issues we have at the governmental level and military level with China, you compare that with, say, the student cluster competitions you see at SC, and these beautiful young people from around the world, in particular the Chinese, and they just seem like wonderful budding computer scientists. The work they're doing is great. And the whole energy and feeling in the room is just of tremendous encouragement. And we're all on this together. And it's really too bad that we've gotten to this point where we're talking about blowing up TSMC and the China invades. It's really, you know.
Right. I mean, I'm laughing because I'm looking at it as just an unlikely and half crazy idea, right? But the fact that we're even considering that and we have to cover it as a piece of news is noteworthy. Yeah, you're right.
Okay, well, maybe next week we'll move on to more cheerful topics. But this was a fun discussion. So
it was indeed.
All right.
All right. Thanks
Thank
a lot.
Thank you, Shane. Bye.
That's it for this episode of the At HPC podcast. Every episode is featured on InsideHPC.com and posted on OrionX.net. Use the comments section or tweet us with any questions or to propose topics of discussion. If you like the show, rate and review it on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. The At HPC podcast is a production of OrionX in association with Inside HPC. Thank you for listening.